Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man who always has a reason to celebrate, but more so today than most others. He is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
And the voice that you just heard understands that we've been through so much collective trauma. Even when we're supposed to be celebrating, my mind hasn't quite allowed me to do so yet. But whenever I do, it will be with the man who is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
Indeed, that is me. Stay tuned. Later on in the show for entertainment, Rich Paul has built Clutch Sports into a billion-dollar brand. I've heard the name Rich Paul, but we're going to see what he's been up to lately. We're going to have some dialogue. Who would you give a star on the Walk of Fame in your life? Prior to that, Q Ward's clapback, 55-year fire. I, like you, don't get really any context. I just get the title, and I, like you, will be waiting with bated breath to hear what Q has for us today. Before we break for Better Do Better, a Republican who backed the death penalty for pedophiles is now facing child sex charges. Don't love covering stories like that, but it is important when these stories make their way to us that we point out that there was a lot of hypocrisy in the Republican Party, especially, and people need to know this going into midterms. We're going to share our opinions. Prayer vigils in Mississippi honored Nolan Wells' 19th birthday. That was yesterday. And so we're going to talk about Nolan Wells again this episode, like we have been doing. We're going to start off by talking about what's going on in the culture. Particularly, why do religious groups care about abortions? There's a bit of a video, two-parter, that I want to share today, and we'll get into the weeds. But right now, and as always, we'd like to start off with a feel-good feature, and today's feel-good feature comes from the Washington Post. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the retired officer who played a key role in President Donald Trump's first impeachment, lost Tuesday to State Representative Angie Nixon, a Democratic Socialist, in the primary for a U.S. Senate seat in Florida. Nixon overcame Vindman's massive cash advantage, leveraging support from labor unions, black churches, and the Democratic Socialist Movement she recently joined to pull off a stunning upset. She will face Senator Ashley Moody, who handily won the GOP primary. Moody is heavily favored in the state dominated by Republican politics in recent years. She was temporarily appointed to a Senate seat in January 2025 after Marco Rubio vacated it to become Secretary of State. In the November special election, Moody and Nixon will compete for the remainder of Rubio's Senate term through 2028. The race between Nixon and Vindman was yet another wrestle between the Democratic Party's ideological factions. In lifting Nixon to the nomination, Florida voters showed that Democrats outside of the deep blue areas where other left-wing candidates prevailed are also eager to hear what progressives have to say. Vindman's loss is a defeat for the establishment Democrats who elevated him, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer from New York. A small business owner and three-term lawmaker from Jacksonville, Nixon made headlines this year when she staged a sit-in in Governor Ron DeSantis' office to protest his gerrymandered congressional maps. She was arrested after refusing to leave. Nixon joined the Democratic Socialist of America only a few weeks before the election, but pushed back on the notion that the affiliation could hurt her in a state like Florida, where socialism is a dirty word. Feels good because, you know, the Democratic Socialists are having their run, and rightfully so. Democrats have a lot to learn and should learn a lot from this moment. And, of course, we're going to see what happens in the general election. But right now, feels good to see the Democratic Socialists doing their thing. All right. Why do religious groups care about abortion? So I'll let you in on a little secret. On this show, Q and I, we talk about a lot of things. And one of the things we talk about more, I guess, behind the scenes than we do on the show is religion and how religion has always really been a big part of the politics in this country, even though the founding fathers didn't want that to happen because they understood, even back then, that religion is very, very toxic for people who believe in logic and science and, you know, the facts that are irrefutable. Faith will cause people to believe and behave in ways that are not healthy for a massive population. People will believe God will come to save them, and they don't need to run away from a fire. That's the sort of thing that religion can do to folks. In this country, the topic of abortion is a very big topic, mostly because of religion, right? So there's a video that I want to share. This person paints a great picture. This video has been around for some time, but this is our first time sharing it here. The creator is someone named Reverend Dr. Caleb J. Lines. I'm going to share a bit, and then we'll get into a little bit more of a conversation, and hopefully I'll be able to share a little bit more after we hear from him. So bear with me while I pull this up.
Why on earth are religious groups so concerned about this? Have you ever wondered that? Well, the answer is that they really weren't until 1978. Did you know this? That in the 1970s, after Roe v. Wade became law in 1971, the Southern Baptist Convention, the most conservative evangelical group in the United States, passed four resolutions in favor of a person's right to choose. Did you know this? In the 1970s, the Southern Baptist Convention was in favor of a person's right to choose. Here's what happened. When Brown v. Board of Education became law, which made it illegal to segregate schools, white folks, especially white folks in the South, began to put their children in private Christian schools. They were called segregation academies. And that way, their good little white children didn't have to learn with children of color. These were religious organizations with a 501c3 status. Eventually, that was ruled unconstitutional under the Nixon administration, and any school that was doing this would lose its 501c3 status. Now, there was this guy. His name was Paul Weyrich. You ever heard of him? He was a political strategist, and he was all in favor of using the segregation issue to get white conservative Southern evangelicals out to vote.
So that's a little bit of the background. I also want to add here that he's delivering this like a sermon in front of a congregation. So again, a little bit of the background there. The reason abortion became a political issue, initially the Southern Baptist Convention, as he mentioned, said that they were in favor of a woman's right to choose. They did not consider abortion to be a moral or religious issue back in the 70s. And once it started to feel like the racism that was reliably propping up the Conservative Party was becoming unpopular, the church needed a different strategy to try to keep folks engaged in their party. And so again, the shift went away from being outwardly racist, which again was started to become unpopular, toward something that people could get on board with. However, in the Bible itself, the Bible treats an unborn baby like property. I forget the exact passage, and there's people like Monty Mader, there's people like Dan McClellan, these content creators that go into this topic a lot deeper than I can. I welcome you to check them out, look them up again, Monty Mader, Dan McClellan. If you want to find out. But in short, the issue of abortion boils down to some laws in the Old Testament that say if a man like strikes down a woman, I'm paraphrasing, so forgive me if I don't get it right, but effectively, if a man strikes down a woman and she loses the baby, then her husband is owed a fee for the baby. And if a man strikes a woman down and the woman dies, then the man that struck the woman should be put to death. In other words, the Bible looks at an unborn child like property. You could pay a fee for it and make things okay, but it looks like a woman looks at a woman like a full person that would incur more severe consequences, right? And there's other bits and pieces of the Bible that people try to negotiate with to make their reality true. That's kind of what this whole bit is about. But I want to let this creator continue, and then cue the rest of the time is yours after we're done. Here we go.
When it turned out that segregation could no longer be the issue to get those folks out to vote, he started looking for another issue. And he tried several. But in 1978, he came up with this plan to try the issue of abortion. And he identified four midterm elections. And he sent people out with pamphlets about abortion to pamphlet church parking lots. And so they went to church parking lots, and in these close elections with Democratic incumbents and very conservative anti-reproductive health Republicans running in very low voter turnout races, that strategy worked. And in all four of those elections, those anti-reproductive health candidates won the election. And they realized that abortion was an issue that would get people out to vote. It would galvanize that Southern conservative white evangelical base. And so they really latched on to that. Jerry Falwell, by his own admission, didn't preach about abortion for years after Roe v. Wade became law. But in 1978, Paul Weyrich recognized that this was the issue. And so he helped Jerry Falwell found the Moral Majority. In fact, Paul Weyrich coined the term moral majority. And that became the issue to get people out to vote at the polls. What's abortion really about? It's really about racism. That's what it's about. That racism was no longer an acceptable cause to rally around to get people to the polls. Because being anti-reproductive health simply isn't biblical, and it isn't faithful.
All right. Once again, that creator is Reverend Dr. Caleb J. Lines. You're welcome to look him up online. Q, your thoughts here.
We knew the answer to this question before he gave it. Because racism.
Mm-hmm.
Like always and forever. I read something on Beyonce's internet that said, as long as harming black people feels like winning, this country will always be losing. Because we've, the statistics and the data show, this is not Q and Ramses's opinion, racism hurts everyone, including racist white people. But hurting black people feels like winning to them. So even when it is extremely harmful to them, their bottom line, their health conditions, the world that they have to live in, they keep signing up for hurting themselves because they think they're hurting us and they like how that feels. Because racism, not because God, not because Jesus Christ, not because Christianity, not because the Bible, because racism, per usual.
Yeah, and how they negotiate the Bible is crazy, but all right, let's share our opinions on these prayer vigils in Mississippi that honored Nolan Wells's 19th birthday. This is the QR Code. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, joined by the great Q Ward. I'll share from the BIN. The National Action Network hosted a national noonday prayer vigil yesterday for Nolan Wells on what would have been his 19th birthday. The virtual vigil, hosted by Reverend Al Sharpton, took place at 12 p.m. Eastern Time via Zoom for all to join. Attorney Ben Crump and Wells' mother, Christine Wansley, also shared the event on social media. Quote, across the nation, let us lift Nolan's loved ones in prayer, honor his life, and continue to stand with his family in their pursuit of truth, transparency, and justice, unquote, Sharpton wrote. The prayer vigil came as Wells' family continues to call for answers and accountability surrounding his death. The Congressional Black Caucus recently called on the U.S. Department of Justice to review the case, while the NAACP joined Wells' legal team on Monday, August 17th, in seeking answers for his family. A separate prayer vigil was scheduled for last night in Biloxi, Mississippi. Pastor Jamal Bryan and attorney Ben Crump joined Wells' family and supporters at Greater St. John AME Church for the 7 p.m. gathering. Bryant promoted the Biloxi rally on social media, noting that it would be streamed live on the Jamal Bryant podcast YouTube channel. Quote, "We will not stop until justice is given to the family of Nolan Wells," unquote. Bryant wrote. He goes on to say, "Tomorrow should be his 19th birthday, but instead we are forced to have a prayer rally." You know, one of the things that I've brought up a few times here is often in stories like this that we cover, the family is left with nothing but grief. This wasn't an illness that, it happens, you know, the sort of thing. Sometimes people get sick and they just can't beat it. That's painful, and of course that will leave you with grief too, but it doesn't feel so vile. It doesn't feel so calloused and heartless as it does when a life is taken by another person, right? Car accidents happen. Accidents happen in general, you know, and all of it is very sad. And we all mourn our dearly departed across all racial lines. It's a part of our species. There's a handful of species that really take the time to mourn deaths. And our species is one of them. But far too often in stories like this, a life has been taken and the person who took the life walks around free, protected, and they get to continue on their life like nothing happened. We cover countless stories like that about police. And they always get to say that they feared for their life. They always get to say, stop resisting. They always get to say these things. They always have guns. They always get to use them, and the apparatus that exists always seemingly protects them. Not the rest of us who don't know how to use, I don't know how to use a gun. Maybe a lot of people do, but I don't know how to use. I never shot a gun in my life. I don't need to. That's not for me. I'm not, guns are to end lives. I don't think that's the purpose of why I'm here, so. But it's funny how the police always get to be scared and they always have guns. If you have a gun, you shouldn't be scared. And if you are scared, you shouldn't be a police officer. Anyway, my point here is that for a family like this, these mysterious circumstances, the idea that, you know, this kid was in the prime of his life, he, you know, it's just a mystery and everybody's acting like they don't know what happened. You're left with grief and uncertainty, and it's really tough to move on. Again, that hollow feeling of a sickness, it comes and it weighs on you, but you can move on. You can make sense of it. I've lived through that myself. You know, but if somebody takes a life and there's no accountability, which again, in black stories, there seldom is, it's hard to move on. It lingers. You know, the person that took your loved one from you, face no accountability, no consequences, are out free as a bird living their life. And so, obviously we covered Nolan Wells' funeral, but on a day like yesterday, what would have been his 19th birthday, on, you know, the 19th of August, 2 days after my birthday, you know what I mean? I got to celebrate my birthday. I had my loved ones around, you know, cracking jokes, and everybody was making fun of me. It was pretty funny, but, you know, this life cut short. These are experiences that Nolan Wells will never get, and his family has to know that every day. So I'm glad to know that his birthday was honored. I'm glad that he's got so much support. I'm glad that we have the opportunity to continue to support his family and to continue to demand answers on a national stage, but I wanted to take a moment to invite everyone a little bit further into the conversation that we have been having, which is about black grief and how everlasting it seems to be. Q, you know, your thoughts here.
So Nolan's sudden, tragic, and very unmysterious death, because it's not mysterious. It's not, this is not something that can't be figured out. This is something that they are intentionally not figuring out. There are a dozen teenagers who know exactly what happened, right? Even if all of those who are his quote unquote best friends that are doing interviews that are somehow not heartbroken, not distraught, not going through any pain themselves as they raise money to defend themselves from maybe being held accountable for something that they might have had a hand in. All of them at least know what happened. Why aren't they assisting in the investigation to bring the people who did something to their best friend to justice, or to help the people that love and lost him find some answers? Instead, they are somehow the ones being victimized here. So, you know, it's also, and Rams and I keep having to have these conversations, and unfortunately, I think everyone's starting to notice, it like kicked off black person season. Because you know they have deer season.
I know, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
This like kicked off black, like they're finding black people hanging from trees like every couple days now. No foul play at all. All being ruled suicides. So a string of black people all decided we don't want to be here anymore. Let's go hang ourselves. All in the South, all under quote unquote mysterious circumstances, no foul play, being ruled very, very swiftly as suicides. Because there can't be any investigations happening. These suicide decisions or findings seem to be rolled out the same day that they find the body. Nothing to see here. This person killed themselves by hanging. It's this is not a movie. This is not a storybook. The good guys don't, not only do the good guys not always win, the good guys kinda almost never win. The bad guys win a lot. And there's no plot twist where someone finds out and brings them to justice and holds them accountable. There's no karma around the corner. There's no, in the movies, all these things that are happening, there's like a Ethan Hunt or a James Bond type figure working to find out who's responsible for it and bring them to justice. It could be local, state, national, or international. And there's someone working to bring them to justice. Even if they're not successful, somebody's working toward that end. All those people are complicit in this story. Yeah. God bless Nolan Wells and his family.
All right, Better Who Better here on the QR Code with Q Ward and me, Ramses Ja. Let's talk about a Republican who backed the death penalty for pedophiles, now facing child sex charges. These stories are always very icky to me, and I do my best to avoid them, but it's part of the job, A. And then B, I've been having a conversation with you about Republicans having to hopefully pinch their nose as they cast their vote, knowing that their vote is the same vote as all of the Ku Klux Klans and all of the Nazis and all of the other white supremacist groups and the Proud Boys and the these people that are they're proudly racist. 100% of those people vote Republican, and so do you. You are helping create a world that they want to live in. And having that conversation brings a lot of people to the table. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who say, I'm not racist. I just don't care enough about your problems to not care about mine. Fine. But maybe I can tell you that you're also voting in the same party, mostly with people who are inappropriate with children. It is rampant on that side. Now, it's probably been within the last year, if not around that time, I did one of the worst things that I ever did on radio. It just was bad for my spirit. It still lingers. I had to read a list of names of people who were elected to office in this country in recent years, in the past, was it 10 years maybe or less? But definitely since Donald Trump's taking center stage in the political arena. And I had to read all these people and the party that they were affiliated with, and then I had to discuss their crime. All these people, they were all white men, and they had committed crimes against children. And I think like 48 of them or 49 of them were Republicans, and I think two of them were Democrats, and one of those wasn't even like a, like there's a problem on the Republican side of the aisle when it comes to this. So if voting alongside Nazis and Ku Klux Klans and so forth doesn't stop you, maybe this might. I'm going to share an article from Newsweek. Palm Beach County Clerk of Court Michael Caruso, a former Republican state legislator who was previously backed the death penalty for adults convicted of sexually battering children under 12, was arrested Tuesday on 5 felony child sex abuse charges. The 67-year-old married father of 7, a lot of those guys were doing that stuff to their children, by the way. Father of 7, who was appointed by Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, faces 5 felony counts: kidnapping, child molestation, lewd exhibition, luring or enticing a child, and child abuse causing mental injury, an arrest affidavit shows. Investigators in Florida say Caruso violated a child who is a relative and allege the abuse occurred multiple times from fall 2024 to August 2025, including on a family cruise, a fishing outing, and during a Thanksgiving gathering. The child has been receiving therapeutic services since April 2026, according to the police affidavit. Quote, being in a position of trust provides no shield from accountability, unquote, State Attorney General James Uthmeyer said. Goes on to say, this individual will face the full force of the law, end quote. DeSantis, who named Caruso to serve as the court clerk and comptroller in August 2025, immediately suspended him from office Tuesday upon learning of the allegations. Quote, it was a very easy decision for me to yank him from that position, unquote, DeSantis said during Tuesday news conference. When asked whether he or anyone in his administration was aware of the allegations against Caruso before his appointment, he answered, of course not. Quote, he had a clean vet, he was well regarded in the community, unquote, DeSantis said, calling the alleged crimes horrific. Let's go back there. He was well regarded in the community. I have no idea how this blind eye can continue to exist. I have no idea how the moral majority is a term that exists on that side of the political aisle. I have no idea. I had no idea that the human mind was that powerful. It is delusion. It is a collective delusion. How in the world do you think Jesus would be in the same line as you voting for the same world? Q says it best, because racism. That's the, you longtime listeners know, I don't like that. I don't like that as an excuse because people immediately tune out. But find me an answer that checks all of these boxes every single time. How can you be that sick and afraid and cowardly? Do better. Stick around. We'll be back with more after this.